Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Rules to order. My apologies for being beyond our announced start time of 1:15. Our regular start time is 1. We had a late floor session, and there was a failure to communicate.
There was. My apologies.
Okay. We will start today at the end of our agenda by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1062.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 1062 directs school districts, education service districts, and public charter schools to adopt a healthy and safe schools plan to address environmental conditions and provides criteria for the content of adopted plans. Similarly, the bill directs the Oregon Department of Education to develop a model plan as guidance for districts and schools. The bill establishes the Healthy, Safe, and Schools Fund and appropriates monies to the Department of Education for compliance with an implementation of Healthy, Safe, and School Plan requirements. There are no amendments being offered at this time.
Okay. We are joined by Senator Dembro and Representative Kenny Geyer. Welcome.
Hello, Madam Chair, colleagues. I'm Michael Dembro, District 23, Northeast, Southeast Portland, and happy to bring 1062 to you. You may wonder why this is coming to you and not to Senate Education, and that's because an earlier iteration of it went to Senate Education, had a hiccup on the last day, and so we had to have it redrafted. While we were at it, we got a bunch more sponsors on it, so it's a very bipartisan bill. And it, I think I can say it's been the product of a lot of work for about a year, actually, with a lot of parties involved, a lot of good conversations, and you'll hear from some of the people who are involved in it today. So back in 2015, Representative Kenny Geyer and I introduced legislation that passed that had to do with the problem of radon in schools, and it requires school districts to test for radon. It was a problem that we became aware of, and it seemed to us that, you know, there are probably a lot of schools out there that are not testing for radon that should. Radon was not something that was at the top of people's minds. And the bill passed. The program is underway. I think it's been very successfully implemented in the school districts. Then came last spring, and for us in Portland, we became acutely aware of the problem of lead in drinking water. Actually, with the experience of events in Flint, Michigan, I think we were all becoming sensitized to that problem. We assumed that this was something that districts were already testing for on a regular basis, but it turned out that they were not. And it turned out that actually Portland Public Schools at the time was testing for lead in the water, but they weren't telling people that that's what they were doing. And we realized that we have a problem here, not only with not testing, but not communicating in a transparent way as much as really is needed. So we were thinking of, so should we do something just addressing lead? And we, over the course of many meetings in Portland around, with parents concerned about the lead problem, they were pointing to other problems as well. Well, there's lead in water, yeah, but there's also lead in paint. There's asbestos, there's mold, there's this, there's that. And we decided that really the better way to approach this would be to do it comprehensively rather than hazard by hazard. Let districts know that we expect them to have a comprehensive plan to address environmental hazards. That would include they would be free to develop that plan, which would be then communicated to their parents and, you know, in a very transparent way. So that, as you can imagine, led to a need to involve all sorts of organizations, the health authority, DEQ, school boards association, COSA, PTA, just a number of different groups and individuals. And this bill is the result of that. You know, I can safely say that it's very much a consensus bill. It's not absolutely final, though. As your LPRO analyst mentioned, there are no amendments before you, but a further set of amendments are being developed because when this was redrafted, some changes were made that we were actually not sure why those changes were made, but they need to be rechanged, and we're in the process of doing that. So let me stop there, let Rep. Kenny Geyer say some words, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Alyssa Kenny-Geyer from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland, and I had the great honor to work with Senator Dembro, who happens to be my state senator, on the radon bill. And again, as he said, when the lead crisis emerged, we're like, what? We're focusing on radon, and we had no idea that they weren't testing for lead. So as he said, some were, some districts were, some weren't. They weren't making it readily available. It was seemed all over the place. And really, this is an attempt to do a systematic approach to it, not that you have to test for every single thing every year, but looking at it item by item. And EPA does have a good model that OHA has shared with us about healthy schools. But what is the timeline where things should be checked on a regular basis? What are the things that need to be checked annually? What are the things that need to be checked over maybe a 5 or 10 year period? So this is really that attempt. I again, want to thank all of the stakeholders. I'm not going to repeat everything you said, but I want to thank an enormous number of stakeholders that have been involved in this, and you'll hear from none of them. You'll hear from some of them. There was no opposition to this. That's what I was getting ahead of myself there. No opposition to this, and I also want to point out in terms of the money, the expectation is that out of the facility grant allocations that we have, that's $9 million cut out of the state school fund, there's a facility grant allocation amount of $9 million. This would say that every biennium, $2.5 million would come out of that to create the Healthy School Facility Fund that would give grants to schools who need some support in doing this kind of work. The other thing I'll just say is one of the questions that has come up over time is, all right, you have a plan in place for testing and assessment. What about mitigation? And I know we talked about this in your committee, Senator Roebland. What about mitigation? What if there is a problem? We recognize that there's no fund right now that will go in and completely correct a problem that could be expensive. And I think the conclusion of all of us at the very beginning of this process was that's not an acceptable answer to say, well, we don't know where the money will come from eventually if we find a problem, and so we just will ignore it. Our expectation is that if there were a real problem and we knew there was lead in the dust or there was lead in drinking water, that communities would rally around that and they might pass a school bond. Or, you know, at some point, if we see that this is something that's really a problem for a number of our schools, we may want to allocate more money in the future to try to address some of these issues. But not knowing what they are when we know healthy kids learn better, we know what lead does to kids' ID, and all of that is not an acceptable way for us to go. Senator Dembro and I were at a conference kind of attached to NCSL last year that talked about all of the school facility funds around the country that get a regular allocation of money to deal with things like that. And Oregon is one of the few places that doesn't have that. So this is a very modest, if you look at this, a very, and I know that's the, you know, ways and means part, but I think it's a very modest, streamlined attempt to make the best use of the Department of Education and Oregon Health Authority, and in some cases DEQ, to help us really streamline a systematic approach to making sure that our kids are healthy, and school staff and teachers as well.
Okay, thank you. Can you just kind of briefly describe what your anticipated amendments will be doing?
There's some very minor things. If you look on page 2, these are pretty minor, but they would also reduce the fiscal for Oregon Health Authority. In section 1.3e, there is something that talks about a plan for a plan being consistent with OHA rules regarding asbestos. But in fact, OHA doesn't have anything to do with asbestos. That's a DEQ lead. Mm-hmm. And so they would just say there, it would say provisions consistent with federal law, and it would take out and authority rules. So OHA is eliminated from that, 3E. And number two, the second one would be Section 1, 3H of the bill is with regard to carbon monoxide detectors. Again, Oregon Health Authority really has nothing to do with that. So we would just say provisions for installing carbon monoxide detection instead of provisions for installing in accordance with safety standards approved by the authority. And again, some of the people we've gone over these with, for instance, Lori from the Oregon School Board Association, this is regularly done anyway. It's making sure that they all know where it should go, but Oregon Health Authority does not need to be involved. The third one, Section 1.5, states that the authority shall provide districts and schools with recommendation regarding evidence practices for the reduction of environmental conditions. It says shall. We may change that to a may, just in order to keep the fiscal down, frankly. And then the last one, Section 1.5A, we would just change where it says diesel engine gases to diesel engine exhaust. They're actually quite minor.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. Next, we'll have Morgan Allen, Lori Satinspiel, and Angela Crowley-Cook.
I'll start. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and we've been part of the process and development of this bill, and I'll keep my remarks brief. And I think this bill is a good extension. As Representative Kenny Geyer mentioned, Oregon is one of a few states that historically has not made investments in K-12 buildings at the state level for capital construction. And you as a body, and Senator Farrelly was a big part of that, invested $300 million in the current biennium in seismic upgrades and bond matching grants. And that impact is being felt right now across the state in literally 100-plus school buildings and probably 60 or 80 school districts have projects underway to make schools safer and healthier for kids. And this bill, when you look at it, and I think as was mentioned, there was a little hiccup in the Senate Education Committee. When you look at it, it looks like a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of things in there it talks about. But the most important thing that what this really does is the Department of Education has already created in administrative rule a healthy and safe schools plan. This essentially transfers that process from administrative rule. So all these things are already required of school districts. These are Division 22 requirements in order to be a standard school. It basically picks that up and moves that into statute and adds a requirement that districts regularly test their lead for water and adds a requirement that they install carbon monoxide detectors in areas where there's combustion. And as was mentioned earlier, we take some money that currently benefits a small group of school districts that have passed bonds and shift that money over to benefit all districts to help pay for the cost of those tests and installing those carbon monoxide detectors. So we are supportive of the bill, and we're going to be at the table to try to nail down the final amendment here in the next few days, but certainly we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, we'll wait till the panel finishes.
Lori Satinspiel for the Oregon School Boards. Again, thank you, and to echo Morgan's comments. For me, when we got to this first discussion about what to do with lead in water and the last summer with the crisis in Portland, we got a group of really smart people from districts together to talk about what they're already doing, how do we make this work for school districts, and the goal being transparency to the public. And I just want to say thanks to all the districts who worked very hard, challenged to the small districts to do some of these things. But we've come up with a great plan. And as Morgan mentioned, and it was mentioned previous, the new model plan will be developed by the department in January of 2019, and districts have 180 days. They'll have to make a few adjustments to this new plan we're foreseeing. And then submit that by July 1 of 2019. I'm working with districts right now as these amendments come in on the fiscal to kind of reduce what what was being asked of them in the first, and then where we're getting down to, what that's going to cost, and those, like Morgan mentioned, the monoxide, the carbon monoxide detectors covered under the plan. Districts, like was mentioned also, they're already doing some of that. But again, it's transparency for the publics and a spot, one person named on the plan that someone from the public could go and ask a question. Hey, I see maybe that we might have something going on in this classroom. Districts have work order processes, so if there's something that is picked out, there's a process that someone can go through to have whatever issue looked at. So it's just capturing all that into one spot so students, staff, parents can all go to one spot. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Angela Crowley Cook, Oregon Environmental Council. We urge your support for Senate Bill 1062, and we want to thank Senator Dembrough, Representative Kenny Geyer, and all the organizations that worked really hard to bring a consensus bill before you. So as an organization that works on the nexus of human health and the environment, OEC recognizes the critical importance of having a healthy learning environment for children. So this bill really is a practical first step to identify the high priority environmental hazards and have schools set up a plan to mitigate those problems. As they develop, children's brains and bodies are responding to the environment around them. Children drink, eat, and breathe more than adults, taking in more contaminants pound for pound. And because they're uniquely vulnerable to environmental hazards and school environments have been shown, and because healthy school environments have been shown to reduce absenteeism and improve performance, an investment in health in healthy schools is an investment in a lifetime of good health. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions from the panel? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, in regard to the seismic upgrades, the money that we allocated and got approved for those seismic upgrades is about half what the need indicates. So I'd like to hear you describe the future and ongoing needs for seismic upgrades in the schools that have not yet been treated. And then after that, please expand your testimony on all the things that are currently required for school boards and districts and school administrators and building superintendents to do in order to maintain a healthy environment. You know, what reports are required? Are we not duplicating some of the requirements that are already out there? And then I'll have a follow-up question, Madam Chair.
So thank you for the questions, Madam Chair and Senator Farioli. As far as the seismic goes, as you know, about 3 weeks ago, we released the 100 projects that have been funded in the second round. And in the governor's requested budget, she requested another $160 million for the program. And Ms. Satinspiel and I are darkening the doors of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Capital Construction and talking to all the members about that and the co-chairs. And we would like – there's certainly the need out there to continue to seismically upgrade buildings. One of the things we've also looked at is increasing the grant amounts, which are currently $1.5 million. Anecdotally, Business Oregon, which is the agency that manages the seismic program, and they do a fantastic job on that, the A-plus from our perspective. Anecdotally, we've heard from consultants that there are schools out there that are going to cost more than $1.5 million that are in districts that cannot afford to pay for the additional part. So the advisory group, which I'm a part of, has already voted to increase the grants to $2.5 million during the next biennium, and we're hoping to catch some of those larger projects out there in districts that can't come up with the match. So I'm very enthusiastic about the chances of that getting funded. We've had good conversations with the Ways and Means Subcommittee members. We have several superintendents coming this Friday to the hearing to talk about the benefits of those seismic things, not just from the perspective of what it's done to make the school safer for kids, but in a lot of those communities, as you know, Senator, that is the emergency shelter place, or that's the place where folks in the community are going to go and rally in case the big one does come. I guess not if, when. So it's a fantastic program, and we certainly have appreciated your support and the support of the legislature to make those investments. And I think the short answer, and I'd be happy to talk to you a little more offline, the short answer to your question is about sort of what is already required. Generally speaking, on page 2 of the current bill, lines 5 through 25 talks about those things in generalities. To get more specific, after the situation in Portland, the governor's office directed the State Department of Education to create a healthy and safe schools plan. And essentially, those elements that you see in that section are the current law in all cases, with the exception of two I mentioned, which this bill would add, testing the water regularly and the carbon monoxide detectors. But things like the EPA painting rule when school districts remodel, that's already a requirement. There are significant requirements around asbestos. The legislature over the years has added requirements such as radon testing and integrated pest management to requirements for school districts. So many of those things are already currently in law, and essentially what we are trying to do is pick up those exist in different places throughout the statute, and one of the attempts here is to get them all in one place. So that people are aware of them, and then add, as Ms. Satinsville said, a single point of contact in the district so that a community member, a parent, a staff member would know that, you know, if Senator Roblin were designated that in his time at Marshfield, that they know they can call Senator Roblin, and he's the person to ask about those things. But there are significant requirements already in place. And from our perspective, the ones that we're adding, the carbon monoxide detectors and the testing water for lead, are appropriate. And most importantly, there's agreement that we will pay for those things. If these were unfunded mandates, you'd be probably getting some different testimony from us, or at least a request to help offset the cost of those. And you already did, if you remember, the legislature did allocate almost $2 million in reimbursed school districts after the lead situation in Portland. And I would say the vast majority of school districts have tested their water within the last probably 12 to 16 months now. And hopefully that answers your questions.
Chair, if I might add, Senator Farioli, some other things we talked about in our group that people do on their own, like for students who might have asthma-related issues, they try to do best practices, vacuum at night, you know, some of those kinds of little things. Buses idling, there's some districts already have policies. The buses can't idle outside of the district to help with the air. HVAC systems regularly checked, filters cleaned. Some of those things were all talked about in this group and how we would capture that, and a lot of districts already do that. Just to add a few more.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Please.
Thanks for pointing out that those schools will serve as emergency operation centers, relocation centers, rallying points, and that there is at least another $170, $165 million in identifiable need. I sort of expect that that will go up as more schools cycle through the from the approved to the completed. Mm-hmm. But we haven't addressed the public service buildings or the first responders buildings or the police stations or the other community buildings that also have to survive. That's not a topic for this panel. I just want to point out that we have far more seismic needs than we have resources to meet right now. What I'm concerned about is the comment that you made about an unfunded mandate. We have these requirements in place. We certainly need to be concerned about water and carbon monoxide. Currently, these analyses for fertilizer, weed spray, and integrated pest management, radon, asbestos, and the other litany of things that people need to check for, those are paid for currently by the school district's existing budget. Does this bill anticipate adding any additional funding or removing funding from the school's appropriation to dedicate to these activities?
Senator Farioli, the short answer to your question is no. We have identified for the two new items, the lead and the carbon monoxide, we have identified a funding source that repurposes some facilities money that currently benefits a handful of districts and now will benefit all districts. But for the other things, that's obviously a topic of conversation for another time, perhaps.
Okay. And last question, Madam Chair. I'm sure that most people are grateful to hear that this would be the last question. If we're moving this from the standard operating procedure checklist for school districts to statute, what's the penalty for failure?
Yeah. So, Senator Furlow, that's a great question. I hope I get this right, and there are certainly representatives from the Department of Education that are more expert than I am. But right now, I believe the Healthy and Safe Schools Plan is in administrative rule in what's called Division 22. Those are the Department of Education, K-12 administrative rules. And as we know, they have all administrative rules have the force of law. But those particular rules have the stick, if you will, that if a school district does not comply with those requirements, they can be found to be a non-standard school. And the ultimate penalty for that is withholding state school fund payment, which I believe has perhaps happened on less occasions than you would need one hand to count over the years. But that's already the requirement. I think that's an important thing to get on the record. And I think that's part of the reason we're at the table and could come to agreement on this is we essentially picked up a current requirement. Schools are already required to do that, already under the threat of that penalty. And we are putting it in statute. That's correct. But from our perspective, it's a semantic change, I think.
Madam Chair, I don't want to discount the motivation that puts us here. You know, lead in the water is not an issue you can take lightly, or asbestos or exposure to any environmental hazard. But what I see here is a bill that produces potentially more sharply worded letters. You know, there's no real penalty for the failure. I think if I was going to look for anything to increase accountability, I would want to see some sort of measurable they say what gets measured gets done. If we don't want to include accountability measures, what we're really doing is setting up another opportunity for sharply worded letters. So there's, you know, if schools that are non-standard have a nasty gram and no real penalty, then moving this into statute may not be the most necessary thing we do this legislative session. So I guess I'd be more interested in saying, if you need to make this a violation of the law for failure, what's the prescribed remedy for that violation? I don't see it in the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Roblin.
Yeah, I want to thank the sponsor of the bill for doing the work. I think one of the things that goes unnoticed in this bill that I think is really important is that there are different sizes of school districts, and some of us know that because we have some of those. In some school districts, the maintenance supervisor is the same person who signs the contract to be the superintendent, who is the same person that is the principal of the school, who is the same person who is teaching a math class. So this puts all of them in one place. That is really positive, because if you're searching through all the stuff, you just became this new administrator and you're trying to figure out what all the things you have to do. Having them all over the place makes it more likely you'll miss one and not do something you were supposed to do, and people will be upset with you. Having in one place helps that. It makes it easier. Okay, I'm going to take care of this. It's one of the things I have to take care of. As has been stated, we all have asbestos. Every school district that I know of, every school building that I know of, knows exactly where all their asbestos is. We've known that for a while, and we check it on a regular basis to make sure it is not getting to the point where it can get into the air and be a problem. It's contained, and we are really careful that it stays contained. Lead is something most school districts that have old buildings, like the ones that I were in, we've worried about for a long time, because we know that it's not that anybody did anything wrong. That's how they built things, and as it goes on, that water gets closer and closer to the lead solder that was used to put the buildings together, and eventually you're going to have lead. So we need to check it, and we need to figure out where it's at. Most school districts know where those joints are, and they're standing ready to do the kind of thing. I always thought we had lead tests because we did it on a regular basis. I think it's a good idea. I'm happy we have a little bit of money to help people with it. I am pleased the bill has moved to the place where its recommendations in other places, and I think most school districts and managers and people want to do everything they can to make it as safe a place as they possibly can. And I know that that's how the districts that I've worked with and the people that I've talked to have always wanted to do the best things. And a little known fact by a lot of people is that when a person walks into your building, you will serve them. And if they have special needs, you will figure out how to spend the money to get those special needs done. So we had a young woman who came to our building who was allergic to light, got sunburned if she was in it for any length of time. So our district had to go and buy covers for every fluorescent light in the building. We had to cover every window that went outside, and we had to help her get from one building to the other without getting exposed to sunlight. that was an expense that we just took on because that's the requirement for school districts. We do that for individuals. Lead is something that affects everyone, so we should be doing that for all of the kids. And the same is true with a lot of these other things. The fact that we've come to a place where we didn't add a whole lot other than we have also old heating plants in many of these buildings, and that's where you get the problem for having carbon monoxide, and we probably should have always been checking that. Some districts did. Others, you've got a superintendent who's the principal, who's the other. I mean, they don't have the time to actually even think about that until the thing breaks down and they have to fix it, and then all of a sudden people say you got a problem and you didn't even know to look before. So this bill highlights those kinds of things, hopefully makes conditions for all kids better, and I want to thank the people sitting here who helped us get to the point where it wasn't going to cost a whole lot of money for our school districts, which I agree with you, don't have the money to do it, but really do want to do the right thing for kids. So, and just the single fact of putting it all in one place is going to help a lot of those people that take on those jobs. So thank you for that. That was just a statement. I didn't have a question.
Thank you. Any other statements or questions? All right. Thank you. Our next witness is Gabriella Goldfarb. Yes, quickly.
That was awfully nice.
Thank you again for the record, Representative Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, and you'll be happy to know that I have to get somewhere. So I'll just say quickly, I wanted to respond, Senator Farioli, to a couple of things he said. One is I'm delighted you're such a champion on the seismic. That is very, very important. I'm a huge supporter of that. I just want to make sure that while we're making a commitment to kids to do something that we would be incredibly regretful if we didn't do after the fact, I also see this in very similar terms in that if we found out later that we had lead and kids were exposed not only to the potential eventuality of an earthquake, but something that they might be exposed to every day. So I see those things very much hand in hand. I'm passionate about both, and I want to thank you for being a champion on that. The other thing in terms of accountability, I appreciate that too, but I think that what we really tried to do here was to be on the prevention side and not so much the accountability or the punitive side at the end. We didn't even that actually never came up, which is interesting. We were really thinking about we know that school districts want to do the right thing, and some, particularly small ones, are so strapped for resources. And so instead of have every single school district doing a different thing, and some are testing and some aren't, and some are telling parents and some aren't, that we really streamline it and that we get so every year they have to send in their plans to the Department of Education, but also the Department of Education is tasked with coming up with some model plans to help them. So it's like everyone on the same page, they can learn from each other. And then also having Oregon Health Authority, which you'll talk more about, coming up with some, you know, one-page information sheets. We talked about whether there should be an assessment for mold. Mold can cause a lot of allergies. We thought we don't want to task them with doing too many things. We don't want to overburden the schools. But we can at least give the facility manager one page on when you do your annual check and you look at the windowsills, and if you see mold, there are some very simple ways that you can clean up mold that will prevent or reduce people getting allergic reactions. So really, it wasn't meant to be punitive. It's to streamline and give them the resources they need to make better use of Department of Education and Oregon Health Authority. So I just wanted to respond to these great questions. Thank you for the opportunity to answer.
Thank you. Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I'm Gabriella Goldfarb. I'm the Environmental Public Health Section Manager at the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm going to be brief and say that we're echoing a lot of the themes that you heard, just how useful and important it will be and helpful it will be for implementation by, you know, every size of school district, and helpful for communicating in a transparent way to the entire school community, in one place, having all the information on many existing requirements as well as a number of new requirements that, again, are not are more about getting informed and using that information as a basis for action, for coordinated action. So as we heard the reference from the from Senator Dembrough in particular, there's just a few little tweaks that will ensure that this is done at a low cost to the state, but still achieve that outcome of good information, making sure that one person is responsible and identifiable for implementing implementing the plan and updating the plan. So that's one important form of accountability that, again, we think is an efficient way to accomplish an important goal of making sure that our schools are places where kids can learn and thrive, because good health is really a prerequisite for being able to, one of the prerequisites for being able to learn, grow, and thrive. The last thing I just want to mention is what great collaboration there was among the folks who represent the school districts, folks from the experts that Lori Satinspiel mentioned, from the districts themselves, who really were key in informing the technical aspects of what this means for schools to implement it, and then the collaboration among the state agencies and with the sponsors. So it was really came out of really good collaboration and discussion, and so we're pleased to be here to say that we think the contents of the bill will achieve the objectives that you've heard about today. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. No questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1062 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 58.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 58A requires that the long-term care ombudsman to appoint a residential facilities ombudsman and prescribes the powers and duties of the residential facility ombudsman. The bill requires each ombudsman to enter into agreements for protecting confidentiality of records and grants immunity to good faith complainants. Additionally, the measure renames the Residential Facilities Advisory Committee, the Residential Ombudsman and Public Guardianship Advisory Board. Lastly, the bill declares an emergency and becomes effective on passage. There is one amendment being offered today. The -4 amendments to Senate Bill 58A direct the long-term care ombudsman to fill any vacancy in the position of residential facility ombudsman within 60 days of vacancy. Additionally, the amendment grants the residential facility ombudsman access to medical and other records deemed necessary in relation to an investigation of a complaint involving a resident who is unable to communicate consent and who does not have legal representation. Revenue paperwork indicates no impact associated with this measure and the -4 amendments. Fiscal paperwork indicates a minimal impact for the -4 amendments.
Okay. Fred Steele?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. My name is Fred Steele. I'm the State Long-Term Care Ombudsman and the Director of the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. Our small independent agency houses three programs, the obvious one, Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, also a relatively new Residential Facility Ombudsman Program that serves individuals with developmental disabilities, mental health diagnoses, and serves as their advocate on resident rights for those residents of the residential facilities of those kind. And then we also, our third program is the Oregon Public Guardian Program. Senate Bill 58 is before you.
Back off from the mic a little bit.
Sorry, thank you. Senate Bill 58 is before you, as we were working on it in Senate Human Services and didn't quite get it, finish the amendment that we were trying to finalize before the deadline of April 18th. The introduced bill, or actually, let me start here. The amended version of the bill that is now Senate Bill 58A. And the A engrossed still accomplishes what was intended initially, just a little bit more robustly and quite a bit more robustly. Effectively, when the Residential Facility Ombudsman Program was established in 2013, it was done initially just by adding some the type of facilities to the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Statute. Long-Term Care Ombudsman Statute here in Oregon has a foundational statute in federal law in the Older Americans Act that is in a gray area as to how it applies for the residential facility ombudsman and basically for residential facilities for individuals with developmental disabilities, mental health diagnoses. The introduced bill of Senate Bill 58, we tried to just insert some minimal language and then while also working on some another bill this session, House Bill 2170, but it was something that was looking at our three programs and a couple additional programs. For that bill, we had drafted drafted some more robust language. We liked that language and then decided it would be better in this bill as well for this residential facility ombudsman program. So in the process of taking that more robust language, adapting it into Senate Bill 58, and working with our partners, getting their feedback, working on any amendments, it was taking a little bit longer to accomplish that. So here we are in front of Senate Rules, and I appreciate the opportunity to do so and continue the conversation. I've kind of touched on what the bill does. I wanted to make sure I touched on, you know, why we're here in front of Senate Rules, but also touch on what the bill does. And I think another point to clarify real quick is this is an agency bill from the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman introduced through the governor's office. The bill really does, and I finally this morning submitted some written testimony, but just in case you haven't had a chance to see that, really accomplishes three things, the main one being the Residential Facility Ombudsman Program, establishing a statutory section for that program, incorporating that federal Older Americans Act language into Oregon statute, along with long-term care ombudsman statute, and merging those into a single statute for that ombudsman program. That's the primary thing that it's doing. Also, our advisory committee for our agency was renamed in 2013 when the Residential Facility Ombudsman Program was added. Then 8 months later, when the Public Guardian Program was added, my understanding, and I wasn't with the program yet, but my understanding is there was an interest in renaming the advisory committee again to acknowledge that they have some level of oversight as an advisory committee with the Public Guardian Program. So renaming that advisory committee at their request, and that this bill does that as well. And then for our actual long-term care ombudsman program and statute, which has been in place since 1985, we're making a couple tweaks to address some revisions in the Older Americans Act as it was reauthorized last summer at the federal level, and just kind of creating some coordination between federal and state statute. Finally, the amendment that's in front of you, the Dash A4, this is the final amendment that we were working on as it was coming out of Senate Human Services, and the has a few just very technical fixes, but then the three primary fixes is clarifying record sharing information between the Department of Human Services and specifically the licensing regulatory function for the Office of Developmental Disability Services for those facilities and homes. And so just acknowledging how we can formally share records between DHS and our office. Also addressing the access to resident records for an individual, especially with, developmental disability and those particular homes that can't consent to access to their resident records in the home or facility where otherwise we look for consent, but in instances where we don't have consent, we needed to address that. That was one of the shortcomings even of the existing long-term care ombudsman statute. And then with the A engrossed bill, when it was drafted, as we were trying to finish it up in Senate Human Services, we actually lost two facility types, and these are mental health homes, but the amendment lost two facility types that we already cover. So in summary, what I want to address is that this bill doesn't change any substantive practice or service or function of our office, of our residential facility ombudsman program, specifically even with the robust language. It's just very much to create clarity in statute and clarity for that program to function. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions from the committee? No questions. Thank you. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 58A. Senator Ferrioli, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, regarding Senate Bill 58A, I move the bill to the floor with a do-pat. Let's amend it.
I don't think you opened a work session.
You're right. I would open a work session now on Senate Bill 58A.
Madam Chair, I move a do-over on Senate Bill 58A. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments dated 5/8/17.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 58A. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 58A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 58A to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Roblin, would you like to carry this?
It seems like the kind of technical bill that I should just spend my time on, so yeah.
Excellent.
Good bill should pass.
There we go.
Okay. Now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1028. Sheree.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 1028 permits professional licensing boards to consider and accept relevant experience in lieu of completion of high school diploma or equivalent education requirement for the purpose of fulfilling requirements for licensure or other occupational and professional credentials. There are no amendments being offered to this bill. We did hold a public hearing on this measure on May 3rd. Fiscal and revenue paperwork both indicate no impact associated with this legislation.
Thank you. And committee, just to refresh your memory, we had a very stimulating public hearing on this with a good discussion. And I would welcome a motion, Senator Farrelly.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we were.
No amendments. 43.
43. Madam Chair,
I'm sorry. 1028.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 1028 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Yeah. Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 1028 to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes, ma'am. I have a question.
Yes, please.
Was there a Measure 91 committee or something? The two of you seem to be kind of having challenges this afternoon.
That was yesterday.
Wow. Last night. Okay.
Yeah.
But it was in this hearing room, okay. And so the residual remains.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Any objections? So ordered. I will ask Senator Manning to carry this bill. Okay, now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 43. Sheree.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 43 recasts and clarifies provisions excluding specified individuals from certain lobbyist registration and filing requirements. There was a public meeting held on this measure on March 13th, 2017. There is one amendment being offered. The Dash 1 amendments recast the current exception regarding lobbyist registration and expenditure statement filing requirements and add that a person who holds a position with a public body or a private entity and whose work and responsibilities include lobbying is not exempt from the lobbyist filing requirements. Additionally, it specifies that the exemption applies to specified election officials, certain representatives supervising an entity's lobbying activities, and specified individuals meeting with legislative members in a personal capacity. Additionally, the Dash 1 amendments add an emergency clause and conditional enactment language. Fiscal and revenue paperwork both indicate no impact associated with this measure.
And Senator Bokus, I believe this was your amendment?
Yeah, it's fixed. And the emergency is we need to bring them under control now.
Okay, well, you better be ready with that on the floor.
I'd be happy to address that question.
Okay.
Senator Johnson.
And we do have Mr. Burson here if anybody wants to ask any further questions.
No.
If not, what is the amendment? It's a dash
one.
Just
Madam.
A dash one.
Okay. I suggest that the obstreperous senator from Polk County make the motion and carry the bill.
Okay, you make the motion, he'll carry the bill.
Well, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 43.
Senator Farrelly has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 43. Discussion?
It is the West Valley, my good Senator, not Polk County.
We do our best here. Further discussion? Are there any objections? So ordered. Senator Farrelly.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 43 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 43 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I'd be delighted to carry the bill, Madam. Thank you.
Any objection? So ordered.
Yep.
And we will have, surprise, Senator Boquist carry this bill.
What a shock.
It is a shock.
See, we're done for a couple of days. Exactly.
Well, thank you, committee. And we are adjourned.